The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody. This is Bob. I've got Charles here along with Kevin. And once again, piloting the ship, Matt Edwards. Mr. C is in a meeting at the moment. He's going to try to break away and join us here shortly. But we wanted to make sure we started on time for everybody on the call. We've got several questions and asset of the week and a couple house cleaning items that we're going to go over. So if you have any questions, you can either raise your hand or put them in the chat room, and we'll be sure to get back to you. And Matt, why don't we get started off with question number one here for the experts, referred to as Charles and Kevin.
All right. Kathy Woodson submitted this, so I'm going to see if she's actually on the able to talk, because I know she said she was going to be on here. So I'll let her ask the question if she can.
All right. I see her name on the list. Let's see if we can get her on the phone.
Kathy, can you hear us? Kathy? All right. Well, maybe she's her mic's not working. So I'll go ahead and ask the question. If you have a question or follow-up to that, Kathy, go ahead and put it into the questions box, and I'll go ahead and ask it for you. So first question was, I have purchased an owner-occupied non-performing note. I've gone through the foreclosure process but have postponed the sale because the owner finally contacted my server. They're very anxious to keep the house, and I have several questions. Number one, is the occupant was willed in the house when the mother died? And since he is not on the note, I assume that a new note must be written rather than a modification. Is that correct?
That's the best bet. I guess my question is, he was willed the house, so I'm assuming the will has been probated and all that's been completed.
I would think, Charles, we probably need, the first question should then be, did it go through probate?
Correct.
And if probate did put the title of the house from the mother to, it's the son, but whoever the occupant is, then they don't necessarily have to do a new note if they're entitled. They can do a modification.
They can do a modification, but only if that will's been probated.
Right. So finding out about probate and then maybe getting a title.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Kathy.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. It was probated back in 2006 or 2007.
Okay.
You have a title policy that shows that who has the property in their name?
A title policy, no.
Did you get a title report when you bought or a title search?
Yes. It's an executor's deed that he got.
Okay.
Does that sound right, Charles?
Yeah. So if that reflects on the title, which I figured the foreclosing attorney would have updated the title anyways when he was proceeding with the foreclosure.
Right. Yeah, all that was verified by the foreclosure attorney.
So you can go back and you can modify that now.
Okay.
Since you got the executor deed. So the servicer suggested a forbearance agreement to make sure they would pay before we started a new modification on the note, and balance on the note is $35K with $13K in arrears plus your expenses, and you paid $9,500 for the note. The old payment was $300. I don't know if the old note even matters since he was not on that note. But if you modify it, the note does. I mean, if you're doing a modification, that's what you're modifying, that original note.
Okay.
You can add that all back into that. I mean, your next question was, I'm not sure how to structure the forbearance agreement. They only have $4,500 in liquid assets. They say they have about $1,000 per month for payments, so it looks like they can pay a good payment. But I structure this like a BK where I get two payments, one for the primary note and one for the arrears and your expenses.
I
just do one note, Kathy.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, if it was me, I would probably just do one note. I'm not saying you couldn't structure that, but you'd have to create a new note for those arrears, and I don't know that you want to go to the trouble of doing that if you can modify it all in one note.
Oh, okay. You have to have a separate note. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, also, my suggestion is if they have, let's say, a couple thousand dollars, I know they have 4,500 liquid assets, but if they'll put down 1,500 or 1,000 or, you know, whatever you feel comfortable with, I would go ahead and do the modification. I wouldn't wait to do a forbearance plan if they'll put a little bit of skin in the game.
I agree.
Really? Okay.
That way you go ahead and you get that, you know, ready to go. Maybe you get them to put $1,500 down. You redo a mod. You give them $800 a month payment. Just don't forget when they say they have about $1,000 per month for payments, you got to include taxes and insurance. You can't give them a $1,000 payment, and then they get $500 a month in taxes and insurance. They'll just default. So kind of figure it all in. Give them a payment they can pay that they're happy with, and they have emotional equity in the house. They'll want to stay. And something you're comfortable with. And I mean, it looks like you're 18, about in it at 53, all in. So whatever you feel comfortable with writing that note at, and take it back for like 10 years or whatever, and season it up for 6 to 12 months, and you can sell a reperforming asset.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. One of their main concerns in the servicer speaking to them is that the note not be sold, because apparently it's, you know, been changed hands several times, and they said that when they stopped making payments in 2010, it was because the mortgage company wouldn't accept their payment because his name was not on the note. And so he specifically asked, you know, can we just, if we work this out, can we just stay with them? We don't want it to be sold again and have to make payments to somebody else. And
well, one advantage that you have is, depending on who your servicer is, you know, if you sold that note to somebody else under the condition that they keep the servicing where it is, that doesn't affect the borrower. The payments, let's say hypothetically your servicer is FCI, then the payments would, you know, you just tell them not to change servicers, and as far as the borrower knows, the payments still go to the same place.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
I would never really agree to that, Kathy, that you wouldn't sell the note ever, because you never know what circumstances you may have 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road, and you may need to sell that note for another reason. You may want to invest it in another note. So
right.
I would never commit to that. All servicers, I mean, all lenders sell loans every day. And, I mean, I've had mine change hands, you know, twice in 1 year. So just, you know, and I don't like it either. And I'd love to tell my lender, don't sell my note, but that doesn't work. They don't really care. So I just would never position myself to where I couldn't sell my note if I needed to.
Okay, well, I haven't committed to anything. Actually, like just 5 minutes ago, I got off the phone with my servicer, it's Madison, and the agent that's working with me had spoken to the gentleman again today, and he has agreed to pay $3,000 up front.
Okay.
Yeah, that goes right back to the comment we made. I would go ahead and take the $3,000 and do the mod. I wouldn't worry about a forbearance plan. I'd go ahead and get a mod. I think you would make him happy, and he would be very appreciative and continue to make those payments.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, look who was able to join us.
You could join us today.
Oh, it's been quite a journey today, but all good. Glad I'm here. Hello, everybody. Got a lot of good stuff here, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Got through our first question.
Well, there was a follow-up from Beth Hell on this question, and would it ever make sense that if someone was really apprehensive about selling a note, could you just sell the LLC that owns the note?
You could.
Would that ever make sense to do it that way?
I don't know if I would, but
I've never seen anybody sell a note by selling the company. I've seen people, for tax purposes, sell a company that they're the whole entity comprised of owning notes.
Okay.
I've had quite a bit of experience with that.
I think they're referring back to the statement Kathy said that the borrowers, upon getting this note starting to repay, reperform again, they want to have a restriction in there where Kathy can't sell her note to somebody else. And, of course, we said, you know, no, you don't want to do that.
No, sir.
All right, Mr. Matt, what do we have up next?
All right, so next up, we've got a question from Rebecca. So let's see if she can speak on the call. Rebecca, are you able to speak on the webinar? Rebecca? All right, I'm going to go with no on that. So we'll, once again, just speak out the question. And if you ever have an issue, just make sure to check your mic for future reference, because sometimes your mic is muted and you aren't able to speak on the call. So the question goes, as I'm a new student, and over the seminar, nothing that I can remember was mentioned about REO. So on the list of REO for sale, I'm guessing she's talking about the ones that we have up on the website, I would like to know if all the liens have been paid and evictions have been done, and any other important information that she should know about the list of due diligence before she purchases an REO.
Charles, it's right up your alley, buddy.
Well, if it's an REO, so all the junior liens would have been wiped out at a foreclosure sale. But does that mean all the liens have been paid or there's not any liens on the property? Not necessarily. So when you're doing your due diligence, you want to look at the title. You want to verify if there's any type of city municipality liens. Sometimes those liens will be superior, and those liens will not. We would not have paid those liens in most cases at foreclosure. If they didn't get wiped out at foreclosure, they still could be there. If there are property taxes, sometimes those taxes are not paid yet, or they have been paid. Again, it's all part of your due diligence. The eviction, you know, it depends on each individual asset. Most of the time, the REOs that we board as REO, when they're boarded as REO, the eviction has been completed. But again, that's where you use a preservation company to do a occupancy check, have a realtor go by there, because you never know if a squatter may have moved in the house. So there's a lot of scenarios when doing your due diligence. That's why it's important to utilize your boots on the ground and your vendors to kind of help you do the due diligence.
But Charles, typically if there's taxes or something, we're able to tell them what that is. Is that true?
We can tell them if there's taxes in most cases. Again, I still would tell you to call the local city municipality to just verify the tax amounts are correct, so the city tax office. But yes, we generally know when we take an REO what the taxes approximately are at the time we take an REO.
And if somebody buys an REO from us, they can still go out and get an owner's title policy, right? They don't have to just even go with a search. They can. We're not necessarily going to pay for an owner's title policy, but they can get one.
Right. If they want a policy, it would be their expense, but they could definitely get an owner's title policy.
Right. And we've bought a lot of REO in our lives that, you know, that's the deal. Somebody like us was selling, you know, deep discounted REO, and you know, we go out and do our due diligence and then buy it. And you're if you want to get an owner's title policy, you can. And I tell people, absolutely, feel comfortable. We're not acting weird about it. Go do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want that, we'll encourage you to do that. I mean, we're glad you want an owner's title policy. We just don't pay that expense, but it's right. Not a bad thing to have if you want one.
And the way we're selling this property is consistent with how kind of the industry does it. So the way we're offering them, the way we position them is, Bob and I cut a deal with a vendor last week that come first part of the year, we should have about 5,000 properties, about 500 that are listed, or 500 that are vacant, and 500 that are already occupied with a tenant. They're going to be a little pricier than these assets, but there's some things you can do with it. So there's going to be a lot of REO opportunities, you know, that will come along. We, I think we all mutually feel pretty strong internally with about, you know, selling these things as low cash flow rentals and what that possibility can look like, the 50-50 model.
Right. All right, Matt, why don't we take a look at our asset of the week while we have Mr. Steve with us.
All right. Okay. And while I'm pulling that up, Jim had a question, which is, Charles, have these properties that we sell REO, have they been inspected out exteriorly, interiorly, and then also winterized since we're coming up on the winter months?
Yeah, so we typically, when we take this to known, the first thing we'll do is get the property winterized, we'll get it rekeyed, secured, and then we'll have our preservation vendors also do an interior inspection when they go out to the property. So yes, there's BPOs, there's winterizations, you know, everything that needs to be done to an REO is what we do when we first convert it to an REO.
But let me just advise, that should not take the place of your own due diligence.
Exactly.
Right, we could have had this property secured 90 days ago. Well, a lot of stuff can happen to a property in 90 days, whether weather-wise, squatter-wise, whatever. So we are giving you the freshest information we have available, but you still have to do your own due diligence. We're giving you more information than you would get from somebody else perhaps on a REO, but you can't just go blind by what we give you. You have to do your due diligence.
And when you buy REO like this, it's as is where is. That's what the market, that's how the market sells it.
Right. So your due diligence is very important when you're buying assets, always.
Eddie, we have an asset this week. It's a sub-performing asset that we thought we'd show on the call. It's a deal that Fund 17 recently acquired, and we thought it would make a good case study for the call, and we're going to kind of go through that. And any comments you have along the way, that would be greatly appreciated. But, Charles, you want to go through this, or you want me to
do it? Okay. Well, this is in Loudoun, Tennessee. It is a sub-performing owner-occupied property. The current BPO we have was in September. What was our BPO amount on that, Matt?
$30,000.
So, nice little property here. Annual taxes on the house are $809. Date of the note was 2009. Original note was $35,900. 7.25% rate, 144 months, with a remaining term of 93 months. So the story behind this sub-performing is it was owner-occupied, still is owner-occupied, or at least by one owner. So the husband and wife have decided they didn't like each other anymore. So they're deciding to go their own ways. The last payment they made on this house was July of 2014, and it's due for July 14th. So up to July, they paid on time and actually paid ahead. So they paid like clockwork, were very consistent. But then again, like I said, they decided they didn't like each other and couldn't decide who was going to pay their house payment or who was going to get the house. So it's actually in a workout process as far as the divorce goes. They've got a hearing scheduled and hearing.
I believe the wife wants to stay in the house.
The wife wants the house. And so...
Of course, she wants the husband to pay for it, but she wants to.
And the husband probably will pay for it at the end. He probably will be paying for it. So anyways, the current UPB is $25,722. The two-bedroom, one-bath house, 1,040 square feet. Average rent for this area is $588. Matt, let's go scroll down and look at the house.
All right.
So the wife is still living in the property, and like I say, she is still in the property. She wants to keep the property, but nobody's made the payment just because they're not sure what the outcome will be with their court hearing, which is, like I say, scheduled in 2 weeks. So,
all right, so we have a nice little house out in the country in Tennessee. Matt, if you go back up one picture, I think you can see that the car is in the driveway there. Yep. Nice little house. If you go back up a little higher, I think our neighborhood showed is pretty much a rural type setting in Tennessee with a lot of green around that.
Well,
I think Kevin can tell you that means it's a pretty safe neighborhood, right, Kevin?
It's Probably because they can't find the house there. It's no. Pretty green.
No red out there. You're in great shape.
That's right.
There you go. It doesn't look too rural. There's some streets. That's a pretty good neighborhood there. So, Eddie, what are your thoughts here? What are we asking for this asset, Matt?
All right.
Well, is it a land contract or a note and mortgage, note and deed of trust?
This is a note and deed of trust.
So it's a note and deed of trust. This is Tennessee. It doesn't take long to foreclose there, right, Charles?
Right.
I mean, you look, the odds of this loan getting back on track and paying again is pretty good. I'd say it's very good. I would say at 14.9 and you got a $30,000 BPO, what would you pay for it if it were a non-performing note? 12.5? 13,000? I mean, the other couple of thousand bucks that you're paying for a loan that is occupied and it looks like it's going to reinstate is a good gamble. You can certainly, run the math and do the 50-50 model and all that kind of stuff and see that, if you had to go rent the house, you could certainly walk yourself out of the deal that way. And there's a...
This loan was a performing loan. It would trade at like 85 cents, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So you get this thing re-performing, you get 6-12 month seasoning, you got some pretty good equity here as far as the discount you can make on that.
Yep.
And again, I think the chances of one of these borrowers coming back and reinstating and starting to make the payments is going to be great.
I paid for over five years before they had marital problems, so they've got some emotional equity. The wife does not want to leave.
So I would say probably 30 days, this would be a great modification candidate for one of them.
Yep, absolutely. It's an affordable payment. You wouldn't have to lower it much. It's $365 a month. So they just need to work that out and agree to it. And it's like a pretty good deal. So
yeah, couple of things just to make sure the budget's right. Somebody checked the taxes. Charles has said the taxes are... $800 a year, so the $36 a month. I don't know if that was why they had the tax escrow set that low, but it may be another $35 a month.
Well, that's they may have forced place their insurance, been paying insurance on the house, and the borrower's paying the taxes. The taxes are current. I could look and just see. I didn't check that to see, but
anyway.
Matt, we can verify that.
Yeah, the taxes are current as of right now is what it shows from our servicer. So.
Okay. Over the years, we bought a lot of assets like this, and it's turned out to be a good business. I mean, it's certainly it's not like they hadn't made a payment in 4 years, and, I can't guarantee you the lady's going to start paying again, but. Odds seem to look pretty high.
Do we want to look at any BPO or anything on this, or are we?
Matt, on the bottom of the BPO, you'll see the tax info and all that stuff as well.
Okay, and they may have just So let me pull that BPO real quick. And I will zoom in. Give me a second.
Oh, y'all got him sensitive now, see.
Matt was testing my eyes last night, Bob. So we were having to get out the magnifying glasses last
night. Yeah, Mangan's up there like.
Exactly.
I feel like I got Matt a little gun shot here. All right. So what do we got here? We got our BPO from September. $30,000, stable neighborhood. Comps are actually pretty tight there. It's not really very rural there. I mean, these comps, you got one right on the same street.
Right.
And the other ones are less than a quarter mile away. So.
Now, let me say this, though, too, Bob. If you notice, all the comparable sales sold.
All REO, yeah.
All REO. So
we might actually have a property that might be worth a little bit more, retail, huh?
Oh, no doubt. If you and I were to go back and foreclose on this and we sold this, we'd probably resell this for at least $40,000, $45,000.
Right. Yeah, I think from when I reviewed the file, I think the initial sale price was like $39,900. They put $3,000 down, and the loan was $35,900. So,
yeah, so that's always your big thing. If you see the REO comp or the REOs.
Matt, can you kind of point to where that shows the REO so everybody can see that? It's like the fourth line. No, yeah. You missed it. Fourth line in the.
Right here. It says REO short sale.
Yep, right there. He's got it.
There you go. So that's where, that's when Charles is talking about where the, what type of sale the comps are. If they're traditional, it would say something like MLS or conventional CONV, something like that, which means they got conventional financing. If it says REO or cash, that means it was sold as is by a bank or an investor. Go ahead and click to page two.
Okay.
And this is your bird's eye view. And if you scroll down a little bit again, it gives you a summary of some of the comps right down there. That's looking pretty good. I think page three and four, Matt, are probably pictures of the comps. Yeah, there's the one right down the street, that first one right there on Summer Street. There's a good overhead view kind of test. It's a good little neighborhood, so it's not rural as we thought with the crime map. The next page should give us the good property inspection information. Well, this is actually the BPO agent's write-up, so I didn't notice any repairs. Here you go, single-family owner-occupied white ranch house, good condition, urban area, fair neighborhood, and I believe if you scroll down, there you go. These, Matt, this says here the annual taxes are only $379, so we may have to check that 809 number and figure out where I...
Well, somebody looked it up on the internet while we were on the call and said it was 809, so I'm not sure.
I can't believe everything you read on the internet, Eddie. Come on. That's why we do due diligence.
They may have pulled just the county taxes here, not the school, not the city. So a lot of times agents just grab information off the internet, Bob.
Yeah, there you go.
Somebody made a comment that all the comps being REO comps or would concern you. The point is, these cheap houses, when they foreclose on them, they sell them for cash and they listed them with an REO agent. That doesn't mean that's all the sales in the neighborhood. They may have 60% of the sales in the neighborhood may not even be in MLS because they've been sold private treaty. So, because if you put them in MLS, you're gonna get a dump cash offer. So when you see MLS comps like this that are all REO, our life experience has been those are wholesale comps. Those aren't retail comps.
Right.
And when we order BPOs, a lot of times ourselves, we'll ask for retail comps. We'll tell the agents if there's retail comps, those are the comps we want. Rather than an agent grabbing an REO comp that's a half mile or a half block down the street, if it's a mile away and it's retail, I'd much rather have that comp a mile away if it's retail.
What we're saying is, we're trying to sell you the asset, so you do your own due diligence. But we're just saying from our life experience, this probably, the BPO probably represents wholesale, not retail.
Right. But all the pricing and everything is indicated on the BPO value, so that's what it's based on. All right, Matt, good job. Charles, what do they do if they want to buy it?
If you want to buy this asset, just send me an email at charlesilm@colonialfundinggroup.com.
And I believe this one would be a first come, first serve, right?
That's correct.
Good.
Kevin, did you say something?
I was just saying on the BPO, the agent also does indicate there that it's a stable market, stable neighborhood, and that the foreclosure activity is moderate. So that backs up what the guys were saying.
Cool.
Very good. Before we get to that last question, let me just cover a couple things here. I'm going to go out on a limb and solicit you guys sending me an email, okay? So it's bobr@colonialfundinggroup.com.
Let me give you his personal email, too.
Eddie.com. we're going to launch a new fund the first quarter. So our capital raise is going extremely well, and we're seeing a heavy pipeline of assets. So I'm in the process of doing a lot of pricing and indicative bids. So what I would like everybody on the call that's interested in buying an asset in the first quarter of 2015, send me a brief email of what state you're looking for, and just, you know, hey, I'm looking for MPL in these states and this kind of price range, and maybe I have this much capital. If I know what I've got to work with out there, I'll expand our buying parameters so that I can help fulfill some of the wants and needs that you guys have. So you don't have to send me a book. Just send me what you're looking for and what you think you'll have ready to go in the first quarter. Bob R. at ColonialFundingGroup.com. I think I also have a Bob at NoteSchool.com and probably a Colonial Capital Management email too, but just whatever. Just everybody should know how to get a hold of me. Just send that over. I will build up a directory of what people want, and I will make sure as we get those assets on board to let everybody know. So, Eddie, you okay with me doing that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I already told everybody, I guess we have
to. No. I mean, I think that's what we're trying to get to, is that we're working feverishly to try to go buy inventory, and we want to make sure that the inventory we buy is going to fit what everybody wants. We kind of generally can describe it, and most everybody's used to buying outside of their backyard. And I want to, you know, kind of circle up before we leave the call today and kind of talk a little bit about, you know, 2015 and what that looks like, what we kind of see, you know, in the first quarter too. So,
All right. Well, let's take question three, and then we'll let you kind of give us a preview of 2015.
Okay.
All right. And I'll go ahead and get Andre on the call and also bring up the BPO if you wanted to look at it.
All right.
Charles, I know you're going to love this question. Can I trust this BPO?
Well, I've already laughed about that.
let's just say our standard response is trust but verify.
Exactly.
Andre, can you hear us and can you speak?
Yes, I can hear you guys.
Okay. Hello, Andre.
Hi.
All right, we're gonna pull your BPO up here and talk about it. Tell us a little bit of the story, if you can, Andre.
Yes, like I said, I'm in the process of buying this note, and after several conversations with the manager of the trade desk, he informed me that the $35,000 that on his website, as far as BPO or what they say it is, BPO or estimated market value. I figured being at 33% on the note will be a good deal. But when I received my BPO, it's at $12,000. But in all fairness, I have to say the comps that I'm getting from this BPO, they're like three miles away.
Right. Well, Andre, this is your lucky day, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say Eddie is very familiar with this market.
Well, that's certainly where I was raised. Pop a map up. Let's look at a map. Give me a sense. I'm pretty sure I know which side of town's on, but let me look at it.
All right, give me just a second.
I'm going to go backwards. I was born and raised, Andre, in Jackson, Mississippi. Now, I haven't lived there in a long time, but.
Amen.
But they still have your name, says welcome to the hometown of Eddie Speech.
Hey, Mr. Speed, quick question for you.
Yes.
Were you on the Yankee side of Jackson or the southern side of Jackson?
I was raised in South Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah, we still have a lot of friends and clients down that way, right, Eddie?
Yep, that definitely.
I think our buddy Walter lives in Jackson, doesn't he?
Walter's a resident expert on Jackson.
All right.
That may be somebody I need to reach out to and get a little feedback.
So when you were looking at, Andre, I'm just trying to get clear. So this is not an asset that we own, is that right?
No, it's from another vendor.
Okay, so you were under the impression there was the $35,000 BPO?
Yes.
And when you got the BPO, it said it was?
$12,000.
Well, that's a quick sale. The real value on it's about 15, looks like to me, right?
12 to 15, yeah.
So I'm just going to ask you a question. They're providing you the BPO?
No, I did.
You ordered the BPO.
I ordered the BPO.
Do they have a BPO that says 35?
No, it's just on the website.
Okay, so they have no BPO whatsoever.
No.
But yet they are trying to sell you the asset for 12.
Yes, 11,750. Yeah, you could say 12.
Okay. All right. So yeah, this is Southeast Jackson. It's over by Metro Center. Metro Center was a major mall when I grew up there in the 70s. Wow. And it's I know the area quite well. This is on the edge of Clinton. Clinton is over to your left, as you can see. And this is probably going to be a tough neighborhood.
Okay.
And I guess our point is this. Megan, would you buy a note if I didn't have a BPO and I wanted $12,000 for an asset and I said it was worth $35,000 but I couldn't prove it?
Absolutely not, Eddie. Especially after I got my own BPO, which I would always do, and it came back at $12,000 as a quick sell and $15,000 as a
let's take a look at the BPO, because I think part of Andre's question was whether or not he can trust this, because it seemed like he has some questions on how far the comps. I mean, just a quick look, when you see this brick house there, Eddie, it didn't look so bad in the picture, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Jackson is one of those markets, it's kind of like Cleveland, Ohio. It's just crazy how cheap stuff is in Jackson.
All right.
And I know that's a high crime neighborhood. I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
Stop right there, Matt. Andre, I think you were spot on when your concern was you're in an area of Jackson and they got to go 2 to 3 miles for comps.
Yes.
I think, Eddie, looking at that map we looked at, there should be comps a lot tighter than that, don't you think?
Yeah, you're in Metro Jackson area. You're not out in the people where have two or three acres of land on a house. I mean, there's, you know, those lots are, you know, an eighth of an acre.
So, Charles, when we order BPOs and we get a BPO that we don't agree with the agent, can you push back to them and say, hey, we need to redo with a little tighter comps? Or
absolutely. You could go back to this BPO company here and just tell them, I don't agree with these comps. We're not in a rural market. We're in a, you know, suburban area, and I think there would be some closer comps. And I'd push back, and I'd have them go back and audit this BPO again. And we have had them do that many times.
And Andre, a couple of things. I was thinking, Bob, that they could do, if he set up with Realty Pilot, just go do an AVM real quick with Realty Pilot and see what you got.
Right.
Okay.
The other thing, Andre, is when you do push back, don't try and tell them what the value is, because you know how they get all defensive and everything. Just tell them you'd like to audit the file, the comps are not tight enough for an urban area, and take another look and put it through your audit process. Don't say, I think it's worth 30, and then you're just going to get into a match going back and forth. So, yeah. Charles, don't we usually just push back? We don't try and tell them the values.
No, don't ever tell them the value. Don't ever tell them the value you're looking for. First of all, you might get an agent that'll get you to that value, and that's not what you want. You really want a true opinion of the value, Andre. And the seller, did you ask them, can they provide that BPO to you?
No, I didn't. I figured, you know, once we agree on the price and I start getting the documents, they would be providing me with their own BPO. But I always want to make sure that I order my own BPO
exactly.
To kind of compare the both of them.
Right. You always want to order your own BPO, Andre. And again, theirs may not be BPO. It says you got their value off the internet. They could have used a Zillow value or something off the internet. So always, you did what you're supposed to do. That's first thing in your due diligence is you want to verify it.
Andre, just remember this, okay? When we offer assets that we own or that we are trying to help another capital firm sell assets, we have a vetting process, okay?
Okay.
The asset you're showing us today would not meet our vetting process.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Every comp I see on there says it's less than $20,000 bucks. And don't get drunk on looking at the pictures on a house in Jackson, Mississippi, because I can tell you that stuff is, I'm from there, but I can tell you that I know Walter really well. We've discussed it a lot, and stuff is pretty amazingly cheap. So if the numbers tell you what it is, don't get deceived by just looking at a picture of it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So also, Jim Fell made a good comment here, and he says that this brand new Kent Clothier private label thing that we've just launched has some really good comp evaluations available on it as well. So I got Kent to include that for us, and glad he did, because it should be a really good tool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
You bet.
All right, that's what we had as far as content. I'm just trying to look back through the question boards to see if there was anything new as far as...
Oh, after that last asset came in, the question board lit up. Oh, yeah. Had a lot of comments after that last asset showed up.
Someone asked, Andrew asked about the new Kent Clothier tool, and how do they get access as students to it?
Didn't we have a webinar on all that?
Mm-hmm. We just did a webinar 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Zarine, are you on the phone? Is that webinar captured somewhere on the member site?
The webinar currently is on the archive for Monday, because that's the day that we did it on, and we're going to be splicing it out and putting it with the actual company so you guys could, so everybody can watch it no matter what site you're on.
Okay, perfect.
Hey, you want to relay that just so everybody heard that and clarify that?
Yeah, so we just launched this private label software with Kent Clothier, which has the cash buyers list, the cash lenders list, the vacant property free and clear list, and also it has comparable sales. And so we did a webinar with Heather, who runs that site for Kent Clothier, who's a long friend of mine. And we did that with her last, I believe, Monday night. So it was on the Monday night call, and Jarena's going to strip out specifically the piece that related to the software and then put it on the non-performing side of the membership site as well. So is that something that you think will be done by the end of the week, Zarina?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right.
I see a lot of questions on the board. Have they all been addressed, Matt?
Well, actually, I have a question back from the original question, so I'll just kind of take it first. Rebecca was asking one on the REO, and the question was, I'm a little confused about buying and selling REOs since I've only done it on the retail side. When I buy an REO, the resale is done without having to take title and not having to do any repairs. And that was a question mark.
Has nothing to do with it. You're just buying a property. It's just REO means real estate owned, and you're buying a property that we foreclosed on. So it's... whether it needs repairs, you know.
I think you said as is, where is, right? So when they buy it, then they have to figure out what their exit strategy is, whether they sell it as cash or whether it needs repairs, and they reload it as a rental or as a seller finance loan.
That's correct. So think in terms of buying an REO. Now you don't have to foreclose anymore because they've already foreclosed. We've already foreclosed. So.
And as far as the webinar, you're able to, anytime we have a webinar, the documents that are on these webinars, we are trying to get them beforehand. Things were going a little short today, so any of the documents that were on there today will be on there after the call within the next hour. So you'll be able to pick up this webinar as well as any documents on the webinar within an hour after this call. So we had a couple of questions on that, so I just wanted to address that verbally. So.
Okay. All right, well, let me just kind of – are we kind of done with our content here for what we had on the slate for today?
Yes, sir.
So let me just kind of give you guys a little overall direction. We've been working behind the scenes. We started a significant process even before Node Expo. Zarina was on a mission at Node Expo, as was Charles, and trying to reach out to you students, figuring out what you need, if you've got roadblocks, what those are. If you guys have noticed, I've been out for a couple of weeks. I've been out on a scouting mission. Bob and I were gone for a week, and then I've been on a mission by myself, and Bob and I have meetings for the next 2 days talking about some of the things that I've discovered in the scouting mission that I think will be significant initiatives for you guys in 2015. It can be some additional inventory that we haven't had. It can be some financing that we haven't had. I know Zarina, you've been on a mission trying to understand some road blocks or some log jams that students have mm-hmm. in that regard. So, I just want you guys to know that we are trying to look at every dimension of Note School, and you know, our mission is to not leave any student behind, make sure that everybody's getting the success and the investment opportunities that they're wanting. And so there's going to be some significant things coming down the pike. If you're brand new, we want to make sure that for the next couple of weeks, when we take some time off to kind of regurgitate and reevaluate some things before 2015, then we want to make sure that we've got you on a path that you're progressing through the membership site in the right direction for the next couple of weeks. You can reach out to, if that's unclear to you, you can reach out to the help desk, and we will get you aligned in some specific activities that we think will be really good for you for the next couple of weeks. If you're an older student, we've got a lot of archived information that'll be something that's available and we recommend doing. You guys better bolt on your helmet starting next year, because we're going to have a lot of stuff that we're going to be progressing with, and I think will be exciting for you. So we want to make sure that we've had about four classes over the last six, or well, really about last 4 weeks or 5 weeks. And so we want to make sure, if you're a brand new mentor student, that you've not in any way say, well, I've just gotten started and now all of a sudden they're taking off for 2 weeks. We've got a mountain of stuff that we need you to do in the interim. And so once again, if you're confused about what that is, then I want you to email the help desk, and that we'll have somebody available to address your questions. Once again, if you're a more seasoned mentor student, you probably have a pretty good sense of some areas that you can go back and review in the interim. And then our executive team will continue pursuing and working on some opportunities that we'll be unveiling to you over the first part of 2015. Mr. Bob, you in agreements with all that?
Yes, sir. I would like to reiterate a little bit as far as these calls are for you guys, and you know, content@noteschool.com. Please send your questions in. If you have ideas on vendor guests you'd like to see on the call, send it to content@noteschool, and Charles and I and Kevin will reach out to some of our vendors, try and line them up. We want these calls to be as productive for you guys as they can be. We'd much rather prefer actual real-life situations than hypotheticals, so you guys have case studies out there. Please send them in, whether they're questions like tonight or specific deals you need help with working your way through an issue. And like I said, if there's programs, vendors, things you'd like for us to go over on this call, the 50-50 model or you know, seller financing, whatever it may be, please send it to Content at Note School, and we'll try to build out the agenda the best we can for these contents.
All right. Well, we are, I know that you guys are going to have your calls tomorrow and Thursday, so at the end of the week. And then for the next couple of weeks, we're going to not have our regular calls. But obviously, as I said, if there's any of you with any that aren't clear about some things that you can be working on the interim, that's the case. And that's going to give us some time to finalize some things. I know we've got a significant conference call with the whole staff tomorrow to talk about some flow issues, some information issues to help every student that starts out in the path, you know, stay on path, start down the right path, and obviously, you know, make it as effective as it can be. So we'll be working behind the scenes, and then we'll retool with you. I think it's, Monday,
January 5th?
January
5th. Right? Yeah.
And one more time, we are seeing a lot of assets, both performing, non-performing, so please email me, bobr@colonialfundinggroup.com, on what you're looking to deploy some capital in the first quarter, because I'm seeing some tapes in the last couple of days that have assets all over the country, larger values than we're used to, and if there's people with appetites out there for some product like that, let me know, because we sure wouldn't mind buying some of it. Just send me an email, bobr@colonialfundinggroup.com.
You guys have a wonderful holiday. Be safe. Love your family. And we will be talking live to you here very first part of January.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Bye, guys.
Bye.